having understood perception to a greater extent, we are now moving to our second concept that we would be trying to discuss at length, and that is learning. The way we are proceeding as part of this very brief introductory psychology course is that we have first tried to understand how the stimulus, how the sensation from the external world reaches us, how we try to assign meaning to it, thereby trying to understand that how do we perceive things, how do we make out sense of how the world is around us. Now that we have understood how we perceive things, we are now moving a step ahead trying to understand that having sensed the world, having perceived the world around us, how do we learn things. Okay? So, let us understand what actually we mean by learning in psychology. Learning basically is a relatively stable change, a relatively permanent change in the behavior, which is basically a byproduct of experience. Fine? So, we have our experience coming to us, and those experiences which makes us learn to the extent that certain degree of stable change come to us. So that next time when similar experience comes, the behavior is by and large guided by whatever has already been learned. This is called learning. Okay? So, that would primarily mean that it is a continuous process, because we always experience one thing or the other in life, and depending on the novelty of the experience, realizing the fact that the stimulus might take a different turn, we do try to modify our behavior. So, depending on the external environment, depending on the incoming experience, depending on the entire synthesis, the relative change that takes place within us, that will guide us, that will facilitate us towards a situation where we yield a response, but we take minimum time to arrive at that very decision that this is the most appropriate response in this given situation. Remember, we are repeatedly saying this fact that as biological creature, we have to basically economize on our effort. So, a relatively permanent change, a continuous process, and also it is a gradual process. Gradual process because any change that you see in the behavior will not come overnight. Okay? So, gradually you learn certain things. Recollect your own past experience. Okay? When you try to learn how to ride a bicycle, okay? It was not that overnight you started riding a bicycle and driving it, maneuvering it with a full skill. That is not true for any one of us. So, how did we acquire it? It was a very gradual process. Okay? And now comes a time when even though you do not ride a bicycle very frequently, tomorrow if you are given an opportunity to do so, you can very conveniently do that. Okay? So, the change that has come to us, it is a relatively stable change. Now, let us understand one thing. From a behaviorist point of view, we would be looking at the stimulus and the response that is elicited once that stimulus is presented to the organism. No? So, we always talk of SOR paradigm in psychology, the stimulus organism response paradigm. Now, stimulus is basically any event, any situation, any condition, any signal, any cue that triggers you to give a response, that is the stimulus. Okay? Response, you understand, the outcome, the resulting behavior that we show, that is our response. But there could be two types of responses, the overt response and the covert response. Overt responses are those responses which are very readily observable. I am speaking to you right now. This is a readily observable behavior. But there could be another type of latent thinking going on which you are not able to observe. Those are called covert behavior. For instance, what am I thinking right now? Okay. Or for instance, when I am right now recording this lecture, which is a readily observable behavior, an overt behavior, what is going on in the mind of the cameraman who stands behind the camera? Okay, that is the covert behavior. Okay. So when we look at learning, we are basically trying to look at stimulus response association, okay. And when we say that we are looking at stimulus response association, organism of course has his or her own importance, but at the same time a response means overt as well as the covert response. Now learning basically involves associations, relationships, okay. So we try to make this association, develop this association, evolve this association between the stimulus and the response. So if this is the stimulus, this is supposed to be the response. If that is the stimulus, that is supposed to be the response. For instance, recollect your school days. A teacher enters into the classroom, okay, and as a what you call newcomer who is being exposed to formal education for the first time, you see that everybody else has stood up, okay, wishing good morning teacher, and then you realize that okay, once a teacher enters the room, what you have to do is to leave your seat, stand erect and wish to the teacher, okay. This is learned, this is ingrained, and next time onwards whenever a teacher enters your room, you first thing you do is that you religiously leave your seat and wish the teacher good morning. An association has been formed between the stimulus and the response, okay. Now how does this association form? Basically three factors govern formation of this association: contiguity, contrast and similarity. Just these three features. What is contiguity? Contiguity is the nearness, okay. So you have the stimulus and you have the response, okay. What is the temporal difference between the two? I'm sure you must have heard this popular joke, which perhaps doesn't make you laugh anymore, that somebody had cut a joke, and then all other animals in the zoo laughed at the time when the joke was cut. One animal started laughing a day later. Okay, now there is a temporal delay between the stimulus and the response. Okay, now associate it with one thing. You answer a question asked by your teacher in the class, and the teacher looks at you with admiration. Okay, the teacher uses certain words in order to admire the appropriateness of the response that you have given in the class. The question asked, the answer given, the correctness of the answer, and the appraisal by the teacher. There is a contiguity between them. So the moment the correct response is given, okay, immediately you are given a positive feedback by the teacher, and this positive feedback doesn't differ too much in terms of time difference from the answer that you had given. Okay, so what happens in the case of learning? More and more there is a contiguity between the stimulus and the response, higher is the association. You learn exactly, okay, this is what is doable and this is what is not. And therefore, in terms of making the social norms learn, contiguity plays a very important role. As one of the dominant pattern of parenting in our culture, parents will not hesitate scolding the children. Many parents will not even hesitate slapping the child. Okay. Now you commit an error, and if the magnitude of the error is considered by your parents to be able to trigger punishment, okay, you are immediately scolded. It's not that you for instance use a slang right now and after 2 days your father calls you and then punishes you, scolds you. That doesn't happen. The moment you use the slang, the next moment you receive an adverse remark by your father. He scolds you, maybe slaps you, and this is how we learn that fine, although this word exists in the culture, although this word exists in the dictionary, this is a non-usable type of a terminology. Okay, the dues of the society has been learned by you. So contiguity plays an extremely important role in learning. The second is the contrast factor. Contrast, you understand, no? So the higher is the contrast, the better is the learning, no? Because you can distinguish two things. So the same example, if I take the appropriateness of the response, the correctness of the word that is being used, and the positive or the negative feedback that is given back to you. You give the correct answer to the teacher and the teacher praises you. You use a slang and your father punishes you. Okay. Now, you very easily understand the contrast between the two situations, and this helps you understand that if this constitutes the do's, then you can understand what the don'ts constitute of. Okay. So, similarly, if you know what are the doable things, the prescribed things, you by default understand what is proscribed. So, do's, don'ts, prescribed, proscribed. Okay. This association can very easily be formed by contrast. And third, we would like to go ahead with the experience, because learning by default is supposed to be a relatively permanent change. So, if it is a relatively stable change, what should it lead to? It should lead you to a point where if there is a similar situation that you are experiencing for the second time or for n number of time, you just extend your previous experience. Okay. And based on the similarity between the two situations, you decide last time this was the appropriate response, therefore, this time also this is the appropriate response. Take the example of the teacher entering the class. Okay. The teacher enters the class, the student leaves the chair, okay, and wishes good morning sir, good morning ma'am, first day, second day, and every time you repeat this behavior because there is a similarity in the situation. You know that you are in a classroom setup, and you also know that the one period is over and now the next teacher enters the room, and therefore, even though the period varies, the date vary, okay, the teachers vary, but every time the behavior remains the same, and this is governed basically by similarity. So, remember one thing, learning basically means formation of association, okay, and association primarily guided by just three factors: contiguity, contrast and similarity. Now, let us understand learning from the point of view of various theories that has been proposed. You can by and large divide the theories into two groups, the behavioral theories and the cognitive theories. Now, basically the behavioral theories are based on the premise that learning takes place as the result of observable responses to any external stimuli. Okay. And therefore, it is also known as stimulus response theory. So, what would happen? You have an external stimulus, you observe the behavior, and based on the observation, you try to calibrate. Okay. And this calibration helps you form that stimulus response association. Okay. The second set of theories are called cognitive theories. Now, cognitive theories basically say that learning is based on mental information processing, okay, which is often in response to a problem situation. So, you are in a problem situation, you try to solve the problem, okay, and now based on the solution that you have arrived in that very situation, you look back and you look at the information processing that has taken place. Information processing basically would require that you have an input, okay, you have an output, and between the input and the output there is a process of transformation. It is this transformation that you revisit, okay, and that is helps that is something that helps you learn the situation. Now that we have talked about the two sets of theories, the behavioral theories and the cognitive theories, let us look at a few things. I am right now looking at those examples where animals who have been trained by human beings and have been made to learn and behave in a particular way. Okay. Deliberately, I am taking example of animals, the reason being that in the next lecture, we will come to various theories of learning, and there we would be looking at the theory being actually based on experimentation done on animals. So, look at these videos.